So your dad heard about the New York Inquirer. Explain what happened the day he, how he found out that the New York Inquirer was up for sale.
My father was actually out with his buddies for having a drink, and he was at a local bar, and he had asked, you know, he was trying to find out, again, it's a story about, you know, Horatio Alger, sort of rags to riches, and he had heard a buddy of his mention that there's a paper for sale. It was a Hearst paper called the New York Inquirer. It had a circulation of 17,000. This is in 1952.
1952, and only a circulation of 17,000. That's not a healthy.
Yeah, paper. No, it wasn't a wildly successful newspaper. And long story short, he arranged a loan from his godfather, you know, Frank Costello, again, and for $25,000, and he went out and purchased the paper.
And he bought the, so he had to go to he knew he could scare up the money, and he wasn't afraid of shaking the mob tree.
He definitely wasn't, as you know, his father and my grandfather wasn't as well. One interesting thing is, though, in this book, you know, there's parallels. And one is, in every generation, the patriarch, let's start with my grandfather, picks a favorite son, my father. And that creates an enormous amount of sibling rivalry and tension. So in 1950, when my grandfather passed away, the brothers and his mother, everybody sort of kicked, you know, my father out of the family business. So here he is. Literally, they're saying, "Hey, you know, hand me the cars, the company car keys back in, and you know, you're out of here. You're gone.
You got nothing.
You got to start all over again." You know,
yeah.
So really amazing. And in fact, not only that, his mother said, "You're the abortion I should have had." She said to my father.
Yeah, that was pretty weird. Your dad was a late in life birth. And your mother didn't want him and told him that his entire life.
Correct.
Okay, that could mess anybody up. How did he survive that?
I mean, the guy had enormous amounts of, you know, sort of baggage he was carrying, but yet he managed to persevere through that. And, you know, these were very driven, tenacious men. That would be sort of an understatement to say, you know.
Yeah, but that's weird because, I mean, that's what an awful thing to do to a kid is to always remind him at times of tension, probably, you know, when he was, I never wanted you. And on top of everything else, you know, you got to feel like your mom hates you. And yet the whole family kind of turned against him when your grandfather died. And he had to start. So he had to go to Uncle Frank and get the money to buy the New York Inquirer, circulation 17,000. What were the terms? Explain the terms that legendary gangster Frank Costello gave your dad.
Well, there weren't really many terms other than, you know, there was, of course, no interest. It was like going to your you know, godfather or family, you know, cousin or someone that was a family friend of yours saying, "Look, can I get a loan to buy a company?"
No. What were the terms on what he could print, what he couldn't print? If he was going to get the money, what could he say and what could he not say on the paper?
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I'll go into that. I meant just for the loan part.
Yeah.
You know, no, basically, of course, you know, Frank Costello wanted to use the paper for example, for the nightclubs, for example. You know, give this nightclub a good review. If he wanted, for example, another family, hey, print something negative about another family. You know, he wanted to use the paper for those things. And in fact, it was used for those things. Absolutely.
Well, and I thought the most important rule was, I give you this money, but you are not allowed to print any stories about the mafia, none about gangsters, none about organized crime. No, none of these stories were to appear in at the time, the New York Inquirer.
That was one of the rules he gave him, although I don't think it was always followed.
Okay, but it was followed well, at least in the sense that he said, "I also want you to expose cop corruption."
Right,
he said,
right.
You know, not only do I not want you, I mean, here's Frank Costello telling your dad, not only do I not want you to write stories about the mob, I want you to write negative stories about the police.
And I would say 95% of the time, you know, my father kind of followed his, you know, what he asked.
Right. But that's a risky 5% to tell Uncle Frank I'm going to publish this story about a mobster.
I think he always walked a fine line, and even towards the end, you know, right before Frank Costello died, of course, my father made this choice, saying basically, look, he wanted to draw the line in the sand and say, you know, no pun intended, and say, look, I you know, want to go on my own way, and he wanted to disassociate and you know, get rid of all ties, and he did, and he moved to Florida, which I'll get into later.
But, right. But for a long time, not only the New York Inquirer kept running into financial trouble, and whenever it ran into financial trouble, he ran to Frank Costello.
Absolutely, he did.
And this was your classic, you know, money in an envelope under a table kind of a deal.
It was, for sure. Definitely.
So how does your father talk about that with you growing up, that they were so mob connected? Was he conflicted about that at all?
I think he was a little bit. I don't think it was something that he talked about often. And in fact, in a 60 Minutes interview, when he was interviewed by Mike Wallace, you know, it wasn't something that he liked to talk about or would get into great detail. I think it was a part of his life he kind of wanted to forget. And, you know.
And yet he wouldn't be anything without it.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, no Frank Costello, no National Enquirer.
No National Enquirer.
It was a while before the New York Inquirer would even become profitable. I mean, you had to do he had to keep going back to the bank of Uncle Frank Costello pretty often to keep the paper afloat.
It was quite often. You know, right after he purchased it, he turned it into sort of a race sheet, a broadsheet. Circulation went up a little bit. Of course, it wasn't still making money. It wasn't until one day, when he was driving down the road, and he had this epiphany, and he saw all these people standing around this really bad, gruesome accident, all these gawkers, and he goes, wow. You know, he suddenly changed it into a crime and gore sheet, and circulation went up to about 1 million copies a week.